ॐ अज्ञानचिन्नन्तस्या जनजनशरकया चक्षुर्मिलितां येन तस्मै श्रीगुरुवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदानेन विभाति शतकमपि. Thank you all very much for taking part in this evening's program. As mentioned, this process of hearing and chanting transcendental sound is elevating, uplifting. In Sanskrit it said, Cheto Darpana Martana. Darpana means a mirror, and Cheta means consciousness. So it's said that our consciousness is like a mirror. And Marjana means cleaning, because mirrors get dusty. And when the mirror gets dusty, then what happens? We can't see ourselves. So that's what happens in this world. Our consciousness comes in touch with material energy, with ignorance, with misunderstanding, with confusion. And therefore we don't see ourselves, and we don't see what's around us, because our consciousness is complete. Some people it's super covered, some people it's less covered, but for all of us it's covered by this dust of material existence. So transcendental sound has the effect of cleaning that mirror. Just I was sitting here and I was looking and things seemed a little weird, and it wasn't you, it was my glasses. So then I had to take out some little water, and now things look a lot better. So this cleaning is needed. And how will we clean our consciousness? We can't just take out a little water or a little dishwasher stuff. This mantra will work. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This is a transcendental vibration. It's coming from the Vedic literature, or it's said, Golokera Prematan Hari Nam Sankirtan. It's coming from the spiritual platform, from the spiritual world. The material world isn't everything. Our present material existence is not everything. We're seeing a limited vision, because we're seeing matter only. And there are two things in this world. There's matter and there's consciousness. And we see consciousness indirectly. We see someone pinches me, I feel it. Or I can examine my thoughts and I say, well, I must be conscious because I'm thinking. I have some desires. That's a sign of consciousness. We see it in ourselves and we see it in others, so we know that it's there. We don't see consciousness. We see the effects of consciousness. But the Vedic knowledge says that consciousness is actually what we are. That's me, actually. I say, no, I'm what you see. I'm American, I'm white, I'm 20 or 40 or 60, I'm this tall or that tall or this tall. That's who I am. I'm Jones and Smith. And knowledge says no. That's the container. That's the wrapper. Just as this is a wrapper.
So throw it around your body, and then, okay, now you're saffron colored, and you're whatever else, whatever qualities that the wrapper has. And even someone may call out to you, hey, saffron. Because they identify, you know, they call you up with some characteristic they can see. Hey, saffron. Or someone has red hair.
Hey, red.
Well, the person's not red, but the hair is red. And they say, okay,
hey, red.
Because they use the red as a marker of the person. So actually the whole body, not just the hair, but the skin, the ears, the eyes, the nose, the whole things, the whole body is really a wrapper for the consciousness within the body. You can say Atma, you can say soul, you can say whatever word you want. But the idea is, that we're conscious living beings wrapped up in these material bodies. And the nature of the body is that it comes and goes. And therefore we are sometimes seen and sometimes not seen. In the Bhagavad Gita it's said that first no one sees us. Then we're seen. And then we disappear and no one sees us again. Kind of like a horse. Or, well, why a horse? An ambulance going by this place. Gallery, yeah? First you don't see it, then you see it, now we don't see it anymore. So, does it mean that it no longer exists? Or that before we saw it, it didn't exist? We know. It existed and still exists, but we only see it when it's right in front of the gallery. So as living beings, we're like that. We're always existing, eternally existing, but we come into these bodies, then you see us, and then we leave, and then you don't see us. But our existence is not the existence of only that time when we're seen. It's permanent. But we identify ourselves with the wrapper. I think, in effect, I'm this body. I'm American, I'm 20 or 30, I'm fat, I'm this or that. So the first benefit of chanting this transcendental sound, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, is that we get free from that understanding, misunderstanding. We start to think, I'm not this body. I'm the consciousness within the body. And the result of that is that because we're no longer identifying with something temporary, something that comes and goes, we're identifying with who we really are eternally, we get free from material existence. Or we can actually transcend birth and death. This is not our only lifetime. We were someplace else. Now we're here. We go someplace else. And then we're there, and we go someplace else again, and again, and again, traveling from one lifetime to another lifetime, the way a person takes off one set of clothing and puts on another set. We're changing bodies, but we're actually the eternal consciousness within the body. So there's so many things that bring us down to the bodily concept of life, to misidentifying with the body. But this chanting of Hare Krishna elevates us to the spiritual platform, where we come to our real nature, our happy nature,
our eternal nature. So this chanting is practical, easy, joyful, and very powerful. Very purifying. So everything can be achieved simply by chanting this Hare Krishna mantra. All the misgivings, all the so many things that are problems that aren't really problems, but they appear to be a problem because we're misidentifying ourselves with something we're not. And as soon as we come to our eternal identity, like a dream, the tiger that was chasing me no longer exists. So again, thank you all for taking part in this program and hearing about this Hare Krishna mantra. And I'm going to keep my remarks short to see what kind of questions you might have. And feel free to ask any at all questions that you might have in your mind or that might be bubbling up. And when they bubble to the surface, you can put a hand up or just shout out. And let's see what happens. Yes.
Okay.
So I'd like to say that I'm spiritual, but I'm not always certain of my beliefs. So my personal question would be, could you explain or in detail share with us one of those moments of clarity and certainty when you know that there's a chance of us being out there?
What are those moments of clarity when you're sure of you experience that it's true?
Yes.
Okay, great. Let me think about that. Srila Prabhupada, my spiritual master, gave an answer to that. And he said that it's something like eating. When you eat and you're full, no one has to give you a certificate. Now you've eaten. You feel, now I'm full, now I'm satisfied, no, I don't want to eat anymore. But it's direct experience. So this chanting of Hare Krishna gives direct experience of the self. And the more we chant, the more that experience becomes palpable, it becomes tangible, it becomes solid. Now, if we have intellectual misgivings or philosophical questions, or I don't know, what do they say about this? What about this objection, that objection? There's so many books. We have some books here?
Yes.
We do. Exhibit A? Exhibit A is on its way.
Looking outside the box, the books have to come outside. Yes.
So this is Bhagavad Gita as it is. The Bhagavad Gita is the essential message of yoga and spiritual consciousness spoken by Lord Krishna thousands of years ago. And you find so much knowledge in the Bhagavad Gita. You may find as you read a verse, you say, wow, that's exactly what I thought. That's right, or what I should have thought. So by reading the books, and also by associating with people who are on this spiritual path, by being in company with those who are making progress in spiritual life, we make progress. It's like someone was playing guitar. I'm sure he didn't start out as good as he is now. But you hang out with guitar players and they show you something and, you after a while you're good. So if you associate with guitar players, you can become good like that. And if you associate with those who are making progress in spiritual life, Krishna consciousness, then it kind of comes out. It comes out in that spiritual company. Even the kirtan or the chanting is called sankirtan. It means chanting together. When we chant together, it has even more effect than when we chant on our own. It's just, all those souls together coming in touch with Krishna brings us quickly. Is that okay?
Yes.
Thank you. Good question. You're around all the time.
I have a question. So is chanting the only way to get closer spiritually?
Is chanting the only way to get closer spiritually?
Okay.
No.
Because I'm an engineer, so I do my approaches from science.
You?
I'm an engineer.
So you want to approach things from a point of view of science because you're an engineer. Sure. Krishna can be approached, or spiritual understanding can be approached scientifically. There's, in fact, we have an institute called Bhakti Vedanta Institute. It's all made up of scientists who are presenting, thinking about Krishna consciousness from a scientific point of view and presenting their conclusions for the benefit of people like you who think, who think science, who think in a scientific way. One of my godbrothers, Richard Thompson, Sadhguru Das, he's a mathematician, wrote a book called Mechanistic and Non-Mechanistic Science, which you could probably find on Amazon, and which is full of equations and all that kind of stuff. But okay, the engineers will be happy there. Yes, that's all for you.
Maharaj, could you explain how the chanting of Hare Krishna can also be explained from a scientific point of view?
Can I explain chanting of Hare Krishna from a scientific point of view? Well, that becomes a big topic, how we approach things from a scientific point of view.
Even simple scientific. It doesn't have to be equations.
I think you have an idea about it. Why don't you just tell us?
But for example, even in the material world, we experience sound vibration has an effect on it. Mm. For example, years ago, there used to be a commercial where Ella Fitzgerald, she would sing this high, high note, go higher and higher, and then a glass would break. Or the people in the army, they try to develop weapons that are based on sound vibration. Usually it's some real bassy note or something like that. Therefore, they can go into a city and kill everybody and still have the infrastructure. So in this way, as you said, this sound vibration is Golokira Premadana Harinama Sankirtana. It's imported from the spiritual world, so it's 100% spiritual in nature. So the outcome is spiritual. Now that seems scientific to me. What do you think?
I'll buy it.
Okay.
Thank you.
There was another question there.
I didn't see it. Where is that? Is there a hand there someplace associated with that question?
I was going to ask something kind of way out there, but maybe you don't see it.
Michael Witzel.
Are we moving that microphone around?
The question was about, is time linear? And then if you're reincarnated, you have to come back, like this 2013, would you come back in the future? Or could you bounce around and come back before you were born?
The question is whether time is linear, and when you come back, do you come back in the future, or do you come back? Could you come back before where you were born? Interesting question. According to the Vedic understanding, time is both forward moving and cyclical. That is to say, typically there's this idea of time having a start point and then it just keeps going down a straight line and either to an end point or an indefinite future. Yeah. So, money. According to the Vedic understanding, time moves in circles the way seasons move in circles. So now we're in summer, fall's next, then it becomes winter, then it becomes spring, and so on. So it moves in a circle. So the entire cosmic existence moves in a circle like that. There's creation and there's destruction and there's creation again and destruction in cycles that take millions and millions and millions and millions of years. So it's not just linear straight, it's circular. But moving along that circle, we may come, say, again to summer, but it won't be this summer, it'll be the next summer. So that there's a kind of forward motion, or the sense of forward motion. Although it's a circle, we don't come back to like yesterday. We come back to tomorrow. And then it goes around and we find ourselves like, now let's say I am 65 almost. So I may come again and again be 65, but I won't be the 65 that I am now. I'll be the 65 in the next show. Is that okay?
It's okay.
Okay. It's an interesting question, the nature of time.
So when you're saying it describes either helix or
no, not
or
not helix.
If it goes forward, is it going also in a circle around? Or is it making a building?
No. It's really a circle, and it's kind of a circle that goes nowhere. That's really what it is. You know, we're here, and then like the sun. The sun rises in the east, and it makes this big circle, and then where is it? It's back in the east again. So where did it go? It didn't make any progress.
360.
It didn't make any progress. Every day it gets up and it goes through this big circle. And then after all that work, you know, going all the way up into the sky and going through this whole drama, you come back the next morning, it's in the same place. So in one sense, our life is like that. You know, I start out as a baby. And then I grow up and I go to school and then I get married and I have a career. And then they give me a prize or a promotion, and all these other things happen, and then I get old, and then I dwindle, and then I die. And then where do I come back? As a damn baby again. You know, no progress. I just start the whole thing over again. Yeah, I became Bill Gates in this life. I made so many billions of dollars and my name's in every newspaper. And then I show up again in some cradle somewhere. And with, you know, nobody knows who I am and I don't even know who I am. And I'm busy, people are diapering me and all of that. Right.
And I came back in this body. So what I'm asking is, if I heard the mantra in another body, does that have a continuum?
Yeah. If you heard the mantra in another body, say you were drunk and you heard the chanting and then you died of cardiac arrest, and now you've come back. Did you get anything from that? Did it stick with you? Yes, it does. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that materially, whatever progress you've made is lost, 100%. You became great politician or a great composer or a great writer or a great something or other.
But don't you believe if you do good, you be good in another life?
Excuse me?
If you do good,
if you do good,
you're going to be better in another life.
Not necessarily better. You get, because there's a mixture. We do good, and we do the other thing. And sometimes not even intentionally, you know. I tried to do good, and I messed somebody's life up.
Yes, I definitely agree.
You definitely agree. So that's kind of the nature of the world, that just being good doesn't work.
Absolutely.
Because it's mixed with making mistakes and messing up, and so we keep coming back. Sometimes in this body, sometimes in that body, sometimes higher, sometimes lower. Yeah, I was good, more good than bad last time, so I come up a few notches, and I do, you know, a few bad things, I go down a few notches.
But don't you, if you feel good, if you do great this time around, if you do good for people and have a positive embrace, the next life, you'll get better.
Not necessarily. Because you still have this world to deal with, where unfortunately, we don't just get better and better and better. Like you see people, you know, they're doing better and better and better, and then they do something really nasty.
Yes, and that's...
Right? And so it's not like upward and upward, where, there's a little affirmation. Every day, in every way, I'm getting better. There was a Beatles song, like, getting better all the time. And then they got into cocaine and heroin, and, you know, they didn't get better and better.
Not at all.
So that's the trouble with karma. It's mixed. So we go up, we come down, we go up, we come down, we go this rocky road, and we're going around in circles. But the chanting or the spiritual progress that you make is permanently beneficial. Everything else is wiped out. Well, your karma's not wiped out, but it's mixed in with all the rest of the karma from millions of lifetimes. And you don't know what's going to come out at what time, you know? So...
I just believe what you put out there is what you get back.
Yeah, it's true. What we put out there comes back. And what have we put out over not only one or two or three lifetimes? Millions.
Exactly, because we repeat.
It's just like a hopeless ball of yarn. Can't you just transcend the karma? Yes, you can.
Like, you don't come back?
Yes, so that you don't come back.
But I mean, like, if we like coming back, because I'm sure, like, we like...
We don't like, we just do. We come back.
I don't know about that. Some people can't choose to come back. Like, that's why, like, Krishna would reincarnate all the other gods and reincarnate himself back into...
Well, Krishna comes back not because he has something he wants to.
Right, but I mean, like, because there's work to do.
There's work to do.
So,
and that's... a different thing. That's just visiting, you know?
Right.
But we're not just visiting. We're in jail. And yeah, why are we in jail? We like it. You know, there's some...
What you make of it?
There are these true stories that people they're going to get released and they punch the warden or something because they can't imagine living outside the jail. They're so conditioned. They're so conditioned, you know, that they can't, you know, hey, they bring me my food every day. I have a nice metal bed to rest on at night. So I want to come back to jail because I don't know how to live outside. So we're something like that, where, yeah, we want to come back, but come back and suffer. It's not the best deal. But that's what I mean by our consciousness has this dust on it. We can't see past this world, and we think, yeah, this is the best of all possible worlds. Sometimes I think it's great, it's the best of all possible worlds, or I think it's lousy, but anyway, it's the best there is. But from the Bhagavad Gita, we understand that there's another world beyond this one, which is the world of consciousness, the world of pure consciousness, or the world of Krishna. And by hearing about Krishna, by chanting the mantra, our consciousness changes so that we think, why should I be in the world of birth and death? Why should I be in the world of matter where everything comes and goes when I could be in the world of spiritual consciousness? where happiness is not mixed with distress, where happiness is unadulterated. Better deal. Okay? Yes?
I was wondering if I could ask your opinion on free will. We each individually have choices.
Yeah, we do.
Predetermined?
We have free will, but it's small. It's a lot less than we think.
In what way? What do you mean by small?
Well, what I mean is that we imagine that we can do whatever we like, that everything's up to us. I can make my own reality, I can make my own future, it's all, you know, I think I can. It's all about that. And the fact is that so much is determined by the body that we've got. If I'm born a boy, I'm not going to grow up to be a girl. The mother option is not open to me. If I grow up, if I'm born black, I'm not going to grow up white. If I'm born in China, I'm not going to grow up speaking French. So many things are stuck on us. And even according to our karma, I go to the best business school, I have the best business plan, everything's like all lined up, and it doesn't work. Because my karma won't let it work. My destiny won't let it work. Because of my previous activities, I can try and try and try and try, and the business will fail. Or it'll succeed and then go bust the next day.
So would you say that we're in kind of debt to our previous life?
That we're
in debt
to our previous life. Yeah, we're tied in one sense by the conditions set by our previous life. I've got this body. Along with this body comes, a certain amount of happiness, certain amount of pain. Some people it's more. Some people it's less. So we get a certain mind, and for some of us, that mind is, all of us, the mind is problematic, right? We have doubts. We have, I wish I hadn't, and I wish I could, and I wish, and I don't know, and oh God, they did this to me, and oh God, they're going to do that to me. And the mind is itself causes so much trouble. For some of us, it's more problematic. The mind is wild. For some of us, it's a little calmer. And there's not... this comes with the birth that we're given. So we imagine that we have all just unlimited choices. This is America. We can make of ourselves whatever we want. But our choices are actually very limited. We're like a man, being washed away in the ocean. And what can he do? He can flap his arm this way or he can flap his arm that way, but he's out in the middle of the ocean. How much can he do? So what does it mean, free will? A little free will is there. What is that? We can turn toward spiritual life. We can turn toward Krishna. Or we can turn away and turn toward material existence, or what's called Maya, illusion. We turn toward Maya, then Maya embraces us. Yeah, let me, here, take this, I've got this for you, it's only two steps ahead of you.
So does Krishna always give us more chances?
Yes. Yeah.
One of these days, even if
it's we have the opportunity life after life. It's not just one shot and then it's either float in the clouds or get fire and brimstone rained on your head. There's another opportunity. Krishna is kind in that way. But then Srila Prabhupada used to say, why wait for some distant lifetime? If I can attain success now, let me do it. Yes?
So when you come back in each life, is it kind of the chance to wipe with your karmic slate clean?
A chance to?
Kind of like wipe.
Wipe your karmic slate clean?
Yeah,
it is a chance to go, essentially to go beyond your karma. And I can also say that if we're taking an interest in spiritual life, it means we must have cultivated that previously. You know, maybe I did 60% of my spiritual life before, not starting from 61%. Or I did 80% before, not starting from 81%. Well, otherwise, like, there's so many people, no interest. So how come you're interested? It means you must have begun this journey in your previous life, and now you're automatically attracted to continuing. Yes?
Okay, so it's another personal question.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I'm hoping that you can share personal experience and maybe not reference. Like, I want to know more about you. But, so the whole idea of past lives, I'm sure you've meditated a lot about it. Who do you think you were in your past lives? And that residue that you've kept with you in this current life, when do you pick it up? When do you notice that these are signs or moments that remind you of who you were in the past?
How do you know, do I have an idea of who I was in the previous life? And when do things happen to you that you can recognize as being residue from your leftover from your previous life? Okay, good question. Answer to the first question, I don't know who the heck I was in my previous life. I'm clueless. I really don't know. No, I really don't know. The laws of nature work in such a way that we forget. We forget. And the Vedic literature explains that death and the process of birth are so traumatic that we forget. We're thrown into another world, essentially, another body, another lifetime, and we forget about the previous life, and then we don't know why. You know, was I a king? Was I a street sweeper? What was I? So we forget. And so I've completely forgotten. I don't know. And even if I knew in my previous life I was whatever, then there was a life before that, and the one before that, and the one before that. There are people who think, well, if I could just know what I was in the previous life, I could sort of undo all the patterns there, all the stitching that was done wrong, and then this life would be better. But it's not so easy, because there's millions of lifetimes that we've gone through. And even if I were to remember, what could I do? Now, that said, there are cases where it seems that people do remember. In fact, in the Vedic literature, there are examples of people who exceptionally, as an exception, they remember. That's rare. There's some research done at the University of Virginia by scientists who studied children who seem to remember a previous life. They have about, it's up to about 2,500 cases now on file and that they've studied, and they're quite extraordinary. There's published accounts of them. But the real thing is not to look backward and say, what was I? Because I wasn't even what I thought I was. Let's say I was Calvin Coolidge in my previous life. Who was the real, anyway, President of the United States. But I wasn't Calvin Coolidge. I was thinking I was Calvin Coolidge. I was thinking I'm the President of the United States. But I wasn't, because I'm not this body. So I'm not the President, I'm not the Vice President, I'm not the cook in the White House, I'm not the dog in the White House. I'm none of these things, because that's only a temporary body. Like, if I think I'm this saffron outfit, that's not who I am. That's just what I'm wrapped up in at the moment. So with last life, I was wrapped up in the body of Calvin Coolidge and thinking, I'm Calvin Coolidge. I was an illusion. Who are you without your five senses? Yeah. You have your senses. Buddhi-kaya-matindriya. The Bhagavad Gita said that within these senses, the eyes, the ears, our consciousness itself comes with its own senses. We think, how could I experience without my eyes, without my ears, without my tongue, without my sense of touch? It's all there. You have a whole spiritual body. Just as, this body is wrapped up, say, in the shirt and the coat. So the body, this body, the one made of skin and bones, wraps up your real body. That's who you really are. You have a spiritual body with spiritual senses, a spiritual personality, spiritual happiness, spiritual relationships. Everything is there. But it's covered by, I'm Calvin Coolidge, I'm the dog, I'm Cleopatra, I'm this and that. So going back and remembering my previous illusion isn't going to help me. What I need to do is get out of my present illusion and come to who I really am. Yes?
Do we always come back as a human?
Do we always come back as a human? Nope. There are so many living beings. They have consciousness. How did it get there? It drifted, it transmigrated from another lifetime. Now someone's standing for, 100 years as a tree. 1,000 years, some trees are that old. So that's a risk. That I live this life and I think, and then I come back and stand in Sequoia National Park for 1,000 years with my arms in the air. So better to chant Hare Krishna and get free from birth and death. Yes?
This can be a little pessimistic, but I'd like to hear your answer. As time goes on and science increases, the knowledge of science increases, what would happen, or how would you feel if science discovers that there's no such thing as reincarnation, and when you die, you just die?
I'm not really worried about it. Science has always been just on the brink of discovering everything. And when you finally come around to it, they're not making progress, they're going backwards. They've figured out that life, that consciousness comes from matter, which is what you would assume. If there's no reincarnation, then consciousness comes from matter, right? That's now that we're advanced in science, we understand that consciousness arises from chemicals. Yeah? And the demonstration, the recorded instances in which that's been observed, zero.
Right now,
zero. The necessary mathematical description of how that takes place, X takes place, and then Y takes place, and then Z takes place, and then this, the actual description of how that comes, zero. The process by which we could repeat the phenomenon, make it happen, zero. So what are we looking at? We're looking at a post-dated check. If someone owes you $10,000, or someone wants to buy a car from you, you owe a $30,000 car. He's going to pay you. And you look at the check and it's dated 20 years into the future. Or even it's dated, next month. You'd look at that check and say, whoa. Right? So science is giving us post-dated checks. Life comes from matter. There's nothing more than matter. Consciousness is an epiphenomenon of matter. And what are they paying us? What's the currency that we're being paid in? Post-dated checks. So I'm not really worried.
Mm-hmm. This is our last question. Last question, okay. If I may actually piggyback on the part of the term off of a scientific approach, because
I'm not necessarily disagreeing, but lending a different viewpoint, because I, in my leisure, I like to read things a little better.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry,
much better.
So in my leisure, I like to read things like theoretical particle and quantum physics, things of those nature, which are very much sciences, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So in my exploration, personally, of those aspects alone, I find a lot of holes in what you're presenting, not necessarily with just regard to this question, but let me go on before I digress too far. So in a lot of physics today, there's been books written about it. You can pick up one from His Holiness the Dalai Lama called the Universe in a Single Atom, for example, which ties in the correlation between physics and spirituality of thousands of years of knowledge that have been passed around. So if you go along the lines of some of those disciplines, for example, there's a superstring theory which speaks to everything at its base level as a vibratory pattern. That's actually been scientifically proven through a lot of different mediums, if you'll excuse that term, to show that frequency can not only be manipulated through intention, but it would also give way to what we interpret as matter. So it's not necessarily matter being a vessel containing this energy that is us, and it's very much the other way around, which will branch out into a lot of other answers or questions I would have regarding the whole conversation we've had here tonight. But to stay on the topic of the physics, I would definitely disagree that it's a post-state check. I would think it's the exact opposite, is that it's starting to come into alignment with what we've always known wholeheartedly and holistically to be something more purely us.
Okay. I could be more precise and say that the reductionistic agenda of science, or the agenda of reductionistic science, is a post-state check. The science that seeks to reduce everything to simple... the interactions of simple elements according to simple laws by which consciousness arises from the basest and meanest and slimmest of elements that tries to reduce everything down to the least complicated, least... That agenda is...
You find the value in breaking things down to a root?
No, a root is fine, but...
You know what I mean by that, right? Like, take, for example, when a tree roots itself, when we root ourselves in ourselves, everything has its a base component, right?
Yeah, root is fine, but the scientific agenda is to find the root of this enormously complicated and wondrous existence with conscious living beings and feelings and thoughts and intelligence. To find the root of that in potassium, nitrogen, carbon, and a few other elements acting according to laws of nature that can be put on one page of paper if you put it in mathematical form. Our approach is to say that the root of all of this complex manifestation is a conscious living being. Just as, say, this store has been put together by consciousness. The floor and the ceiling and the fluorescent lights and the plumbing and the color scheme, it's all a result of consciousness. That matter has taken this elaborate form on the basis of consciousness. So if you look to the root of this store, you wouldn't say, well, it's kind of like wood and glass and bricks and so on coming together. You look to conscious intention and you say, somebody built a store.
I think you could go a little bit farther than that as well. If you'll bear with me, I mean, you can kind of go along the same lines of vibratory patterns and so on, which give way to what we view as this stage in the wood that built it through our senses, right, which are only filters. Everything kind of exists on that same level.
Yeah, there's
right?
On the same level of... I missed the last point.
It exists on that same level of consciousness. So it's not so much that I only ever speak for myself, but I would never come in here and look at a building and think neither to the person who built it nor the structure that it is, but rather the fact that it's the limitation and the filters of my senses that's creating it to be what it is, what I take it to be. Does that make any sense?
It makes us,
so
we take it to be something.
I
don't see the reality of what this building is. That's a fact. And there's two parts of it. Because you brought up the idea of it being like vibratory and having, consciousness sort of permeating it. And then you brought up the idea of a root also. So I would submit that our picture of the room or our picture of reality is incomplete until we come to that root. And in Bhagavad Gita we find that root is a conscious living being. And that's Krishna. Now, just sort of to bring it, because it's an interesting topic that you're bringing up interesting thoughts, but they're slipping me these little notes that say 2 minutes, 1 minute.
Sure.
To bring it sort of in a circle, when science really advances, when science really reaches its peak level of sophistication, they'll find out what the sages already knew thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago.
That's where we're at today.
Okay. So, from that point of view, which is easier, to make a little more progress, a little more progress, a little more progress, or just find out what the sages already know? So that's our approach, is to go back to the sages and find out what science will discover in the future.
Would you also say that, just real quick, sorry, I know we have 2 minutes, 1 minute, not that, but we are the sages ourselves, yes? I would think that in every day...
Potentially we're the sages ourselves. But in fact, we're pretty messed up sages. I'm a sage, but you know, I don't even know where I put my guitars, my car keys. I dialed the wrong number on my phone. I pull on what I think is a nice vine and it's poison ivy. I act in ignorance in so many different ways.
So when I give the definition, or rather when I use the word sage, I would liken it more to in every day and every moment that we exist as sages in the sense that through free will we can choose the options that are laid before us that then set the path.
A sage is a person who knows which path to choose. If we knew, we wouldn't be going to school, we wouldn't be reading books.
How do they get there though? There's always a starting point.
My point is, there are sages, and every one of us is potentially a sage. In my pure state, in your pure state, in pure state of each one of us, we'll all be sages. The Sanskrit is jnanina. All of us are, by nature, full of knowledge.
Where do you think that potentiality lies? If we'll all potentially be sages,
where does it lie? It lies under a thick covering of illusion. That's the problem. I'm a sage by nature, but I'm doing the stupidest things in the world. If I'm a sage, why am I sticking a needle in my arm and injecting, you know, poisonous substances into it?
What if I were to say to learn?
That's a hell of a way to learn.
But we all choose those paths ourselves.
Yeah, okay, then a sage is defined as a person who's potentially brilliant and factually stupid. That's a different thing from what I have in mind. By sage, I mean a person who really knows, not a person who potentially knows. You know, like a baby. You know, you see a baby who's, or you see a drunkard who, you know, he's a high school dropout, he's a drunkard, he's a fool, but he's potentially a scientist.
So I guess that's where we differ, because one, that wasn't necessarily my definition, but what I'm trying to suggest is that we already do know.
Yeah, we differ.
Exactly.
So we do
know, but like you suggest as well, the illusions as they
there's something's wrong because you know one thing and I know a different thing. So one of us must be wrong. That means one, we're not all sages.
I don't think that neither of us are really wrong.
If I think this is green and he thinks it's blue, one of us is wrong. If you think that all of us are factually now sages and I think it's something else, one of us has got it wrong.
I think you use a lot of semantics. I apologize.
And one of us is screwed up in semantics. Which is
you can both be right. You can
yeah, based on your level and he's on his level.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Then we're not, then they're different
kinds.
Then that's fine. That's fine. I'm on my level, he's on his level, the next guy's on his level. Then there are different levels of sages, from brilliant sages to kind of so-so sages to stupid sages. So then it's a matter of semantics. Where all some of us are really, what I'm saying is that in the material world, most of us are really stupid sages. Which is another way of saying that we're all, by nature, sages. But we're covered at the moment by illusion.
That's a very bold
perception.
Excuse me?
To judge.
Stupid is a very bold word to use.
Yeah, of course it's a bold word to use.
Everybody's experiencing themselves.
I mean, I think that a person who's injecting heroin in his arm is doing something stupid. Now, that's a strong word. You may think it's like less intelligent, if that feels better to you, or uninformed, or misdirected, whatever word sounds right to you, but it's not on the same level as drinking milk and cookies.
Now, if I may, if using heroin, since that's the example you like to keep using, was something that was waiting for that particular person's life, so he can correct whatever karma, unbeknownst to us, that he may be correcting, since that's another term you like to use, would that not be of value to that person? Though you may not understand it, and though it may be grotesque to you, it very well may be a footprint you have to step upon.
That's an interesting theoretical construct that, you know, everyone's sort of, whatever you do, that's like good because it's meant to happen and everything is for the better. And read.
Whatever meant is what we choose in this day, right?
Whatever we, no. I couldn't disagree with you more.
Okay, how would I like to do?
I couldn't disagree with you more. There's, if everything is just meant to happen, and whatever we choose is just, you know, we're all, then you've really got determinism. And you've got no choice, you just do what nature dictates, and it's all, there's no use saying that it's good or bad, because it's just what is. And then this conversation is pointless, because everyone's just going to do what genes or atoms tell them to do. So we're just sort of like going through these useless patterns called talk. And it doesn't make any difference at all. And whether we're sages or whether we're idiots doesn't really matter because it's just words. And every one of us is just following what nature is going to make us do. That's one point of view, and I don't agree with it.
That wasn't my point of view, though. So if I may elaborate a little bit, what I'm trying to suggest again is, we'll take, for example, the basis of the yin and yang, which exists in a lot of different...
The basis of?
Yin and yang, which exists in a lot of different disciplines as well, but we'll use that for the sake of conversation. So if you look at that as a construct as well, and you look at the fact that there exists a positive and a negative aspect of everything, including action, word, deed, these type of things that exist in every moment of every day, there exists in front of you the opportunity to create your path, regardless of whether you choose left or right. It's going to lead you holistically in that circle you talked about earlier, because it's going to present you with the opportunities to make decisions in your life, right? So
wrong.
You can choose one or the other. You can choose the heroin.
Wrong.
You don't believe that you have choices?
I believe that there are certain things that you do that are going to torpedo your choices. And certain
things...
In
that direction, sure.
And there are certain things that are going to do that are going to open up your choices. So, which is why someone's Confucius and someone's a, carrying, beating license plates or harvesting rice. There's a difference. If I purify my consciousness, if I take up spiritual methods of purification, my choices open up. Even suppose I live a simple way of life, I live in harmony with nature, I eat natural foods, I live a healthy lifestyle, that's going to give me a lot of options. If I eat junk, if I live in a way that's like contrary, I'm just like fighting against nature at every step. If I live in a way that's self-destructive, what I eat is poisonous to my system. I take things that cloud my consciousness. The choices that a drunkard has are not the same as the choices of a college professor. Because one is doing something that elevates his consciousness, and the other is doing something that degrades his consciousness. The person who's degraded his consciousness has made his sphere for choice smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. And the person who purifies his existence makes his opportunities for choice greater and greater and greater and greater. Which is why Confucius is still of interest to us. And the person who's, just the ordinary dullard is not. We don't, what he said doesn't interest us. What Confucius said does. So there's, you can say gradations of sages, or, you know, we each have a certain, our knowledge, put it this way, is more or less manifest. Just as a
if this were a light,
it could be covered by a little bit of a, you know, a translucent shade. It could be covered by a thick shade, or it could be covered by, you know, a metal can.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Hare Krishna. Make sure you get, they get some prasad. Very important. So, thank you very much. Thank you indeed. And we can
steal all your time.
Oh, no, it's meant to be stolen. Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
We thank Park for a lovely and very enlivening discussion. Discussion is to be most likely continued after the musical parts. We'll continue. Yeah.